Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to positively change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership, a proven and powerful process for unlocking the full potential of the people and teams across your organization, giving you the competitive advantage in the marketplace. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Business for Good, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show. Some individuals are just lighting the world on fire, having a significant impact on everything they touch. Today on Conscious Curiosity SD, we have such a leader. Holly Smithson, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. It's nice to be in air conditioned and staying alive.
It's a very warm day today. Holly is the CEO of Athena, a local nonprofit supporting the advancement of women in STEM with a mission to have 1 million women in STEM leadership by 2030. Prior to Athena, Holly successfully led the launch, merger, and financial turnaround of three California companies in the clean tech, biotech, and STEM sectors. She is recognized across California as a disruptor and innovative leader, including inductee in Women's Hall of Fame in 2023. Top 500 Most Influential Leaders, CEO of the Year, and Businesswoman of the Year by the San Diego Business Journal. Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, I've been a little busy.
You have been very busy. You ready to rock and roll with this thing?
Yeah, I'm delighted to be here, and I appreciate the invitation.
So I'm going to throw you a little fastball right out of the...
All right, have at it.
So when you look back on your career, what's that big thing that was like the pivotal moment to really kind of set you on the tone and direction you're on today?
I would say the biggest influence in my career path and certainly my leadership principles would be the 10-year tour of duty that I served when working in Washington, D.C. I worked in a couple of different federal agencies at the State Department under Dr. Condoleezza Rice, and then I worked over at the Environmental Protection Agency under former Governor Whitman right after 9/11. And what I learned in those 10 years on the Hill, I like to say I kind of got my PhD, if you will, on how not to treat people.
There you go. Isn't that the case so often?
Yeah. And there's so much to be learned when we are in the observing how folks are carrying out what I would say in Washington, D.C., their entire existence was the preservation of power rather than actually coming in to create value, to actually affect change and build and, I would say, elevate communities and societies. That was not the MO.
That wasn't the goal.
In my time, in my humble opinion.
It's not advertised as such as we're in this presidential election. Like, here's all these wonderful things we're going to do for you, right?
Yeah.
And then it's just a big thing of dysfunction,
yeah.
Self-centered.
Well, and I would argue that a lot of the conduct and the behavior, what we see in leaders, regardless of their corporate leaders, their political leaders, I mean, they're all humans, right, at the end of the day. And I would argue a lot of them, it's fear-based leadership, right? So they operate from a place of scarcity. And when we're leading to lift up other people, we operate from a place of abundance. In other words, there's plenty to go around. Let's continue to support each other. Let's lift each other up. Let's grow the pie, whereas some corporate leaders think that there's a shrinking of the pie. And there's a lot of headlines with some local San Diego companies that are making the headlines about severe greed in your face, flagrant greed. And I certainly observed in D.C., greed is a bottomless pit.
Can't have enough.
Nope.
At the end of the day, you just can't have enough. I don't care how big your yacht is.
Yep. And that's right. So that's fear-based.
Yes.
Right? So to answer your question, you know, that experience really shaped me and shaped my leadership. It shaped my passion to give voice to those that don't have one or would like their voice amplified. I think during, you know, my 20s and 30s, I don't know that it was so overt, you know, that lesson or those experiences. But it sort of shaped me. And when I was done with my 10 years on my anniversary, I was really motivated to do something different. I wanted to get out of the federal government where bureaucracy and lack of transparency and accountability, like those just weren't tenets on the Hill. So I wanted to go into the private sector. I wanted to go where real things happen and real things matter. And so I had an opportunity to come to California as I was sitting in an internet cafe in London because I took a sabbatical overseas.
Ah, so you took a moment to think about things?
Yeah.
Nice. That's always a good thing to do. Yes, that's a good thing to do.
So I was not a big fan of London. There was hailstorms, you know, these bullets that are flying at me sideways. The cobblestones didn't go so well with my Washington, D.C. high heels. And nobody smiled. Like, they just weren't a smiling kind of society. Everyone looked down. It wasn't really my energy. And so I was in an internet cafe. This is 2007, and the Great Recession was in effect. And so I was like, where am I going to go? What am I going to do? I'm a Navy brat, so I really, really enjoy adventure and the unknown.
So you got no trouble moving about.
Yeah, I would say probably my greatest gift is my relationship with the unknown, which is playing itself out of late. Of course, it does every day, right? Because there's...
It's a surprise every day. It's called life. It's our learning moments,
Holly.
Yeah.
And so I came to California, and that was 16 years ago, and it was just been an extraordinary ride. And everything I wanted on that rainy day in that London cafe came true.
Wow, love it. Well, you're definitely put yourself in the middle of something where you're really trying to lift up some folks here.
Yeah.
So maybe talk a little bit about Athena and what that is and what you're trying to do there.
Yeah. So it was another interesting milestone in sort of our societal shift when I took over the reins of Athena in 2017. You may recall it was the hashtag MeToo campaign that was in effect. And you suddenly, I think it was Uber, one of the engineers at Uber, Travis Kalanick was the founder and CEO, young guy and brilliant, and he came up with this platform called Uber. And they hired a bunch of engineers, and one of the engineers was a woman. She went on to realize a lot of discrimination, harassment, and then put forth a manifesto online. And this is when all of these great platforms were popping up, like lemonade stands at the beach. They were everywhere. And suddenly you had this evidence that couldn't be, you know, it was submitted to HR. It couldn't be swept under the rug. And so you had all of these platforms on LinkedIn, all of this. And suddenly you started to see all these women give voice to their experiences as women working in science and tech. And so the timing was pretty inspiring. And so Athena, at the time, we had been serving the leadership development needs of women in STEM. And when we saw what was happening in the science and the tech world, we decided that we needed to be a much bigger play, a much bigger role, and become an advocate and actually use our platform, which for 20 years we had been working with Illumina, Pfizer, Oracle, Qualcomm, Bristol-Myers Squibb, all of these companies would turn to Athena for the development of their female leaders. But we had never done anything beyond that. It was just merely, here's how to navigate male-dominated industries. Here's how to build your network so that you don't just get stuck in one job. You can play the long game. But we decided that we needed to be an advocate and play more of an advocate role. At that time, we joined hands with the United Nations. And they had it is the Global Compact. And that basically was a platform. It was the world's largest corporate social responsibility initiative. And it has a sunset of 2030 to realize these 17 global goals. And one of those global goals is achieving gender equality. So when I saw that, I reached out. My background obviously is in DC and working with a lot of folks, a lot of global stakeholders. So I had reached out to the folks at the UN and I just cold called. I said, my name is Holly Smithson. I'm the CEO of Athena. I understand the Global Compact is looking to recruit and get far more CEOs around the world to sign on and commit to these global goals and then report every 2 years on how they're doing on those different goals.
Actually have some data to support that something's happening.
Yeah, yeah. And so the whole idea was let's drive this data-driven conversation so that we're not operating from what I experienced is the perception gap. And a lot of men and a lot of people think that, oh, well, I've got Susie in HR and I've got Kimberly in marketing, so we're good. And so that's what we call the perception gap, which is oftentimes wider than the gender gap and the pay gap. So anyway, so it was just an awesome opportunity to bring the UN Global Compact, which is a platform and has all of these different resources to help companies achieve these global goals. And by the way, the United Nations, their charter after World War II was to make sure that we don't blow ourselves up to smithereens and make sure that we're a sustainable planet. So gender equality was actually one of the top tiered goals that they thought would get us to that 2030 quicker than any of the other global goals. So that, to me, there was a terrific alignment that I wanted to bolster up.
Right.
And then I wanted to bring the Illuminas and the Qualcomms and the Pfizers and the Bristol
Myers. Part of the party here. Right?
And say, hey, if your CEOs will sign on to this, you'll access all of these resources, all the network of all the other companies around the world that are committed to this so that they can drive business performance, drive profitability, and drive innovation cycle. So for all of that, that was a huge shift for Athena as we knew it back in 2017. And that enabled us, obviously, with the pandemic, we had to also flip the switch and provide our leadership content in a digital format. And that's when we decided it's time to go global. So it's been an incredible 7 years, Jeff. It's just been extraordinary. And all of these events, I would have never foreseen the hashtag MeToo campaign to know that there was a massive, massive gap in the marketplace in terms of having a voice for women. And then also would not have foreseen the global pandemic where we needed to make sure that we were digitally capable of serving women wherever they are in the world who want to contribute to society and human health through the fields of science and technology. So it's just, these are the market forces, and what are you going to do to respond and level up and leverage our 25-year history? It's just been a ride like nothing else.
The doors keep opening and you keep walking through.
Yeah, you gotta love that. I mean, some people would see them, as doors. Some would see them as vaults, but it's all in your perspective.
Right. So how are we doing?
Well, it's
because you're a data girl.
Yes. So I'm, you know,
are we winning or losing this war, Holly?
Well, I would say we are progressing. They always say when you're assessing a relationship, whether it's platonic, whether it's professional or romantic, it's not is it ideal, but is it always progressing? And that is your, that's sort of your check mark, your vitals, if you will, on the way forward. And listen, today we have 3 out of 4 STEM jobs that are held by men in the U.S. 3 out of 4.
Really?
Today. Notwithstanding all of the data that shows there's 30 to 40% return to shareholder value when there's greater diversity, notwithstanding the innovation cycle, notwithstanding the retention, all of the data and the business case is out there. And I beat that drum on every stage that I get invited to. And at one point, it sort of has to occur to you that this isn't about business. And I'm going to go back to my opening remarks.
Right, because you just looked at the ROI. You was go, yeah.
Well, I mean, like I said, my
be a no-brainer.
My PhD that I learned in Washington, D.C. is that they are operating from a place of preservation of power. And so we come full circle, understanding and remembering what you've experienced working for the most powerful town in the world. And what did I experience? They weren't looking for the goodness to lift up communities and societies and constituents. It was the preservation of power. And so we come full circle. Here I am working at this global women's leadership organization and trying to help up women that don't have an Athena down the street in Hyderabad, in Istanbul, in Quebec, wherever they are. We now have an opportunity to show them that they can help identify with a STEM career, notwithstanding the numbers. But as I continue to make inroads, Athena continues to make inroads into these different parts of the world that our corporate partners have employee operations, the pushback is the power. It's not business. And so if we're going to solve for a problem, we need to actually identify what are the underlying currents that are preventing it to go with the flow. And so that's just, in my view, is where we are. And then that means you have to have very, very strong leadership before you can have this shift in society that I think we're in the midst of experiencing, certainly on an election year, presidential right. election year. People see politicians as dividers, and sometimes they see them as unifiers. What if, and I watched Ronald Reagan's movie, which was outstanding last weekend. What if, and he was talking about how certain dividers became unifiers. What if the divider that some may see politicians as actually ends up being a unifier?
That'd be powerful.
Yeah. And we had to get the worst of ourselves out there to realize Is that really who we want to be?
Right. Gotta get worse before it gets better.
Yes. And that just hit me. And I may be totally wrong, Jeff. I may be totally wrong.
Oh, I don't know. We don't like to change until we have to, right?
Yes.
So until we actually prove we're going to blow ourselves up or something. Like, oh, yeah. Maybe we should think about this.
So all this is to say, to answer your question, how are we doing? We're making progress. We're continuing to beat the drum. We're never going to put the microphone down. We will always, always lend our voice. And we have an incredible platform of women that have come from other countries. They have come from other continents, different languages, and they're all here because they are wicked smart and they have a lot of ambition. And they're not pissed that there's only 1 in 4 women in STEM. They're determined. And I have seen that very subtle shift because I can get pissed. And then I watch them and it's a completely different energy. Mm. It's I'm focused, I'm disciplined, and I'm playing the long game, and we need Athena and other groups, affinity, advocacy groups, to stay focused on the larger vision, and you got to play the long game. So if we stop and, you know, get upset, which is fine, you can be frustrated, we can drive
you're
data.
You can have your moment.
You can have your moment, but don't ever, ever keep your eye off the ball. And that's really the role that we've been playing for a quarter of a century. And now that we're going global and tapping into the United Nations Global Compact, all of our 50 corporate partners at Athena, they all have operations, right, in Singapore and Sydney. It's just an awesome extension to tap
into anywhere in the world you go, wow, they're actually getting in right over there. I mean, is there someone that's kind of ahead of the curve? I mean, we're kind of hoping we'd be those folks, but apparently not, right? Is there someone else you can point to and go,
Well, so it's interesting because, listen, California is a global STEM hub, right? This is where the world expects us to solve for these problems, to disrupt the way that we've been doing things that may be function of tradition but aren't necessarily productive. And so we get an opportunity to disrupt. That's what people around the world, when they think of California, that's...
So you want it to be us right here.
So I think it's incumbent upon us. I think part of our history. It's part of our DNA. And I think the signs of our time with the next gen, I mean, we're putting so much on them to
save us. Well, that's the question I was going to ask. How much of this is sort of like hopeful for the next generations, different view of the world than the old white guys like me? I mean, everything you look at, right, they're just got a little different view.
Well, and it's interesting. And we'll see what the mobilization is on the floor, on the ground for the presidential election, because there's a lot of rumbling about how much organization on the ground, if they're able to organize, mobilize, and execute in the way that we saw with the Obama administration, like the youth.
They're going to have a big voice in this if they wanted to.
Yes. And so we'll find out during election day how committed and mobilized the young, that next generation is.
But I just know how I was when I was in my 20s or 30s. I don't know what the world was doing, you know, versus today. I'm like on top of all this, right? So there's something about youth where I guess you're not paying much attention to some of this stuff. But
well, and I just see, you know, when you think about in the 80s, I mean, it was, you know, Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan got more votes across both parties. There was a youth movement on Ronald Reagan. I mean, it was just a starvation for new leadership. And obviously, he became obviously one of the most revered presidents in our modern history. So we'll see. We at Athena, we have this wonderful multi-generational alliance that we're leading. And you talk about, okay, how are you going to do this, Holly? How's Athena doing? What's the progress report? What's the forecast? What's the weather forecast here? And what excites me most about the platform in Athena is that we, a couple of years ago, our board members, who all are executives at science and tech companies, they say, hey, our companies want to invest deeper into the talent pipeline. So although Athena for 25 years has been serving the leadership needs of women in STEM, professional women in STEM, we hadn't served the middle school and the high school that really, or the university, that really wasn't part of our mission. And we wanted to be very focused.
Oh, you were kind of under contract to these corporations.
Yeah, yeah.
Provide a service to them.
Yeah. And so those same board members who are our corporate partners said, we need to invest deeper in the pipeline. Let's open up our leadership program, our leadership content, and our network to the university students so they can start to be mentored by all of us and, you know, the 10,000 women in the membership portfolio, allow them to come into some of our aspiring leaders programs so they can say, oh, so that's what I need to do. Oh, well, maybe that might inform my curriculum here at the university because I really like molecular biology. I didn't know that I could use computation. I mean, it allows them different pathways and exposures as opposed to figuring out what to do after the university
right. And
not getting that head start. So we opened that up a couple years ago. We then started to see an influx of university students from University of Michigan, University of Florida, Berkeley, Stanford. It was remarkable that they were finding out about us. And then second, that they were so hungry and ambitious to get a game plan way earlier, certainly way earlier than I did when I was 19 and 20. And then what we realized, Harvard had conducted some research, and they said that a lot of the pipeline for middle school kids in terms of pursuing STEM academically is they would fall off. Their interest would be very robust. And then to around 14 or 15, you would see a fall off. And that's because they start to get hormones and boys start to, they like boys.
Got other things to do.
Well, no, they would get pressured. They're like, what are you doing in this science class? What are you doing in this genetics class? What are you doing? You need to be in home ec. You need to be in, you know, whatever. So that's the research and the indication that was going to be a true focal point if we wanted to continue to nurture and cultivate that talent pipeline and not see that big, huge drop off in the high school years. So we have a partnership with Scientella, which is a very, very impressive student-run organization. Obviously, they have board members with executives, but they have 17 chapters around the country, and it's all middle school and high school students who are focused and really committed to pursuing STEM careers. So we have a partnership with them, and the folks at Scientella, we link them up with our corporate partners, and they get to do secondary research projects. They're doing one with Microsoft. They just kicked that off last week. They did one with Attire Pharmaceuticals. They did one with Illumina. And so these young girls are coming together and they're cracking problems and they're attacking them. And then after the 6-week research, they then present to the leadership team. And so it gives them confidence. It gets them deep into what are the research implications of a particular drug or diagnostic or what have you. And then they get to see other women inside these companies and identify, oh, I can be a VP of translational research. Oh, I can be a director of market access.
To see what this looks like, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a challenge for all kids, right?
It's awesome. It's just pathways.
Yeah.
It's just pathways.
You just don't know what's out there, right? You watch TV, you know, maybe you maybe know what your parents do for a living, but other than that, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I want to be a doctor. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Then next thing you know, you're 40 and you go, what the hell?
You still don't like, I'm still trying to figure out what
I'm doing.
How did
I get here? 68, still trying to figure it out.
So it's a really exciting opportunity for us. We have another initiative with the San Diego Unified School District where they have a lot of underrepresented minorities and they want to get them exposed to pathways. It's just exposure. Like, thank God I was exposed to tennis as a little girl at 10. I was like, this is my greatest passion. I love tennis. It's the same thing. It's like if you don't have somebody in your family that's a, you know, science or technologist or engineering, you don't have anybody in your immediate sphere, you just don't get exposed.
So it's not gonna happen most likely. Yeah.
It's super, super cool. And you hope that you plant all of these seeds and then you get to nurture them, water them. And then when they get to the career, when it's time to launch their career, now they've got a network. Now they've got confidence. And then we want to obviously funnel them to all of these employers who, by the way, I think it was the World Economic Forum said in 2025, there's going to be an 85 million shortfall.
Oh, yeah, right.
Globally on STEM expertise. And in the U.S., it's about almost 3.5 million. So we're looking at a massive, massive workforce shortage. And so what are we doing on the ground? Because we've been at this for 25 years, our tentacles are pretty deep and pretty wide.
So you're leading a movement.
Yes.
I love that.
Yeah, thank you.
So let's talk about that for a moment here. That's all about leadership. And I mean, it's one thing leading something, starting a movement. That's like a whole nother program.
Yeah.
So maybe talk a little bit about confidence. I know you just recently did a TED Talk, which is not public yet. So
yeah.
Maybe we get the inside view of this here.
Yeah.
Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, thank you. It was very interesting, Jeff. During the pandemic, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. It was, I think for all the women in your audience, we always hear movie stars. What's her name? Brad Pitt's ex-wife.
Oh, Jolene.
Angelina Jolie. I mean, we see these movie stars and they get breast cancer. And as little girls, we're like growing up and you see the news and you're like, oh, well, when I get breast cancer, when that happens to me because it's so prevalent, you've already decided in your mind what you're going to do. So you've solved for the problem. And then when it happens to you, you're like, oh, man, okay, we got to move. We got to go in. We got to get rid of this cancer, get this out of my body. Then we got to recover and then get back to life. And having all of that on your lap during a pandemic was not, it wasn't as smooth as they have it in the headlines of these movie stars who are afflicted with breast cancer. And my whole confidence, I was like, I am a CEO. I go to work every single day and I problem solve. Every single day, that is why I get up. I love to problem solve. I love to drive impact and I like to affect change. So this is going to be no different. And
one more project on the list.
Yeah. And it didn't go smoothly. And I had to wrestle with a bunch of a variety of hospitals that were under their own duress and a lot of malfunction or dysfunction.
Mostly because of COVID? Or just in general, that's the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, one of the CEOs of the hospital was under investigation for how he treated staff. Anyway, it was not optimal. And then there's the sick care system that operates with a P&L. I mean, they're all businesses. They may be nonprofits, but they operate P&L. So you have to understand that. But anyway, I had lost my confidence that they were people that I could trust in the healthcare and that they had my best interest and that I was priority number one. And none of that materialized for me. So when people trust me with their high performers and their, high potentials to elevate them in the leadership track, I devote my everything to that. And I was projecting because I thought. I made this assumption.
Everyone looks like you, Holly.
Yeah. And I thought, I care so deeply about these women. Like, I care deeply. And when people don't share that same level of care and devotion, it hurts. So I had to reconcile that. Like, not everybody operates at your level. Not everybody operates with your same set of standards. And they have their reasons. So I lost my confidence. Like, I lost my mojo in a significant way. So fast forward 3 years later, I got an invitation to give a TEDx talk. And I said, I know exactly what I'm going to be talking about. I run a global confidence lab here in La Jolla, California. And I'm willing to bet that there's a lot of women that this is going to resonate with. So had the opportunity to tell my story about always having confidence for as long as I can remember. Navy brat, moved on lots of different states and countries, had to orient and acclimate and find my way and make friends in quick order. So all of those experiences allowed me to have the constitution that I have. And then when life threw me a curveball and put me on my ass, I stayed down for an extended amount of time in that arena. But eventually that got boring. And I don't like being a victim because it sucks. I'm action-oriented, and being a victim is the opposite, right? You're waiting for something outside of you to happen before your power comes back. So that was a beautiful, beautiful lesson for me. It was a great invitation for growth. And so I got to share my story.
Did it give you some empathy for others, maybe?
Yeah, definitely empathy. But as I lead this movement with all of these women, what I find in the last 7 years of my tenure at Athena is the common denominator across all of these women, the middle school, the university, the young professionals, the executive women, the CEOs, all of these women, their greatest deficiency is confidence, in my view. And we get beat down in life and it happens and then you recuperate, you remember who you are. But what I say in my TEDx talk, Jeff, is that confidence isn't a fixed trait. It's an attitude that you practice, repeat, and rehearse. It is an attitude. And I always tell people that do not think that being confident means you have to be fearless, because that's utter rubbish. And true confidence learns to dance with fear.
Yeah. That's my wife. There's two people in the world I go with. These are the two most fearless people. And my wife goes, not that I'm fearless. It's just I'm willing to go there.
Yeah, the law of duality. So yeah, the two can coexist.
So that's that confidence.
And what a difference it makes. It's this attitude. It says, no matter what happens, I'm going to get to the other side. And the way that I approach it is going to determine how much I learn by getting to the other side. And I'm a student. I'm a lifelong student. If I'm not learning from you or anybody else, I'm going to be restless and I'm out. Cancer came to teach me. And cancer, once I saw her as the instructor that she is, my relationship to it, my approach to my rebound, and then obviously the way that I want to spend the second half of my life on this planet. I want to elevate more women to share and experience and relish what confidence can do to the way you lead your companies.
Did that create a little bit of like, oh my goodness, I'm not going to be here forever. I'm not indestructible. I mean, did you have a little reflection time? Because I recently had a little thing myself here that was a bit of a wake up call.
Oh, wait a minute.
Something's going to happen here in life. You know, I need to pay attention.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely, I mean, I've always been very, very spiritual, not religious, but spiritual. I always felt
there's
like
something else going on.
Yeah. Just like you're here, Holly and her DNA, like this vessel, you are here for a reason. You are here for a purpose. It is much larger than you. So don't waste your time. Get after it. Get after it. I've always felt this visceral sense of urgency. In my earlier years, that would hinder my leadership when everything is an emergency. That exhausts your staff. It exhausts your team. And if everything's an emergency, nothing's an emergency. But I've always had that. Like, I've always had that. And I operate on a higher frequency. It's just where I'm at. So I don't attract and I don't interface on other fields of energy. People that are negative, people that have low, really, really low, low energy. We just don't interact. It's like a car and a plane. You know, you can see each other, but you'll never right. ever be on the same plane. So it's natural that I came to Athena with all these women who are so incredibly intelligent. They're so brilliant. And they're so determined. And they've channeled the energy. They've moved the channel from anger to determination. And that's when I started to see a bigger picture here with my sense of urgency. And then also the sacrifices that these women have made. I mean, a lot of our members, they speak different languages. They came over here. They didn't even speak our language. Holy crap. And then they get in these positions and they're director for 14 years or senior director
right.
for 18 years.
You know, they got so much more capability than what's
being. And they have the responsibilities, but they don't get the title and they don't get the money. Mm. They have VPs that report to them, but they don't get the title, they don't get the money. It is, yeah, it's wild. And they're like, well, I'm going to wait this out. I'm going to do my best and be grateful that I have what I have. I mean, the contrast between those.
I got to admit, I probably wouldn't do good in that environment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the humility, right?
Yeah.
But then also the lack of confidence. That beats down your confidence.
Sure.
When you're witnessing this and you're experiencing this, and then it gets normalized. And so that's what I talk about when you said, hey, what are you doing on this movement, right? So there's a lot of motion. We want to be able to position ourselves where motion gets converted to a movement. And converting Athena to go global and establish, and we deployed a lot of resources and our technical capabilities to have this. We call this kind of the Netflix for STEM chicks, if you will. And this is our on-demand leadership lab where folks, wherever they are in the world, can actually stream all of this rich leadership content. How to articulate your value proposition, how to build social capital, how to flex your leadership muscle in negotiations. All of this stuff that is, it's not rocket science, but it's actually dedicated content. And all of that content is created. It's generated by other women in STEM. We also have male allies. We reached out to them a couple of years ago, and now we've got 10% of our member portfolio are male allies.
And how do they show up in the program?
Well, a lot of the Fortune 500 companies are saying, hey, we're definitely, certainly after George Floyd's murder, mm-hmm. they're like, okay, we're going to double down into our commitment and our investment, and we're going to resource into diversity and equity, inclusion, because that was politically expedient. So some thought. We're seeing that play out today. But what the Fortune 500 companies were saying, if we're going to realize all the financial gains and the performance gains and the innovation gains of these diversity programs, we've got to recruit male allies because they're 75% of our workforce. So if they're not in on this, this isn't going to take off. So we opened up the male allyship. We had a male allyship committee. We had a bunch of folks that were amazing. And they're like, I'm just a middle-aged white guy. Am I in the right room?
Right.
And I said, are you kidding me? You're exactly where you're supposed to be. And come together and say, how do other guys who go, how can I help? You know, educate them in the same way that you want to be educated. And as you know, the best way to learn is to teach. And so these male allies who have daughters and wives at work or have an interest or are super, super, super smart and want to make sure that they get a fair shake. So those are the men that are coming into the huddle and saying, look, we're just a bunch of engineers. You know, guys, we're not that bright. Just give us the playbook and we'll figure it out. I said, okay, well, if it's that easy, have at it. And I love the playfulness and the willingness. And so we've had that for several years, and it's been extraordinary. We obviously have a long history of serving the needs, the leadership needs of women in STEM. And so this is a new segment for us to go after. It's been pretty powerful, the work that they've done. They're doing role playing. They're doing videos of what allyship doesn't look like. Mm-hmm. And so these guys are running very sophisticated operations. I'm like, so we just get out of the way. We're providing the platform. We're obviously providing the technology. And we're really going to make this a movement when we invite more men to help come in and solve for the problem.
Love that. Good stuff. So what are you optimistic about? As you sit here and look at the world, obviously you're trying to make this thing move. What are you excited about?
So it's interesting. A lot of managers and leaders are always in the forecasting stage and trying to portend what's going to happen and not happen. And then how do we operate within those hypotheticals? I operate from a little bit of a different realm, and that is recognizing, and I certainly learned this in my cancer journey, is that life happens in ebb and flows and seasons and cycles. And we're going to have really good rides, and then we're going to have that ebb. We're going to have a season of great progress, kind of like what we saw during, you know, the hashtag MeToo campaign, and then the George Floyd murder and how society shifted in the way that we treat people that aren't white and privileged. And so those are the seasons where we had a lot of abundance. We had a lot of growth. We had a lot of, I would say, higher evolution. And then it was too much. And then we saw the economy get hampered. And then we had politicians that were operating from a place of fear and said, let's take back everything that we just gave. This is getting too much. This is scarcity. The only way for abundance is to strip people of the equality and the opportunity and the access that we gave them in the last 4 years. So then we moved into a cycle, right? Then we left the flow and we went into the ebb. And so if you understand how the seasons and cycles of life operate and you take a much higher view, it's not as frightening. There's not anxiety. There's an expectation that this is how
right. You can life, see the larger picture of what's
yes,
happening.
Yes. And so it's sort of like when you think about, I love this analogy, Jeff. So think about the bow. So you're pulling that bow. You've got the bow and arrow over your shoulder, and you're pulling back that bow, and it's tightening and tightening and tightening. You have so much resistance. And once you're ready to let go of that, that arrow goes in the other direction at the highest velocity. And so I think about all of this resistance in that same metaphor.
Building up one of these days.
Yeah.
Someone's going to let go, and here we go.
And so I feel like we've pulled back with all of the defunding of diversity across state legislatures, where we fired all of the diversity officers at all of the big tech companies, where we've dismantled all of the FTEs, the full-time employees that are dedicated to making sure that there's a healthy culture code in place. All of that is completely dismantled. And that's what I call or equate to the pulling of the back, the tension, the resistance, the fear. And then something's going to break and we're going to go in the other direction. And if you look back and you're a student of history, you can see that metaphor play out. So you have to just keep beating the drum. You have to keep your eye on the prize. You have to be committed, and you have to continue to drive value creation. And I believe that the success of Athena's movement to go global is going to be predicated on this multi-generational alliance. We're bringing the next generation. We've got the executive women in STEM, and then we've got these male allies. So each of these key market segments are crucial players in the entire ecosystem so that we can solve for this 85 million shortfall in STEM expertise that the World Economic Forum.
Right. I mean, you would think you would look at that and say, we need to fix this because of that, right? I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer. It's coming, so.
But what you just said is it's a no-brainer, right? If the argument is that we have a shortfall, that would be logic.
Thus, the logic goes out the window when you get to all the people side of things, right?
And
start thinking about greed and everything else.
When you operate from a place of fear and scarcity, logic right. ain't in the room, Jeff.
Yeah, exactly.
So here we are. And I'll tell you, when I come back in my next life, I'm going to be an anthropologist. It is so joyful to be able to go up to the, 35,000 foot level and literally see.
Just watch all the craziness that's going on and how it all really
the accordion,
together.
Right? Yeah. The accordion, it just gets expanded and contracts, expanded and contracts. It is so fascinating. And you know what? It is so predictable. Where's the wall?
Yeah.
Where's the wall?
Well, we got to put a bow on this, Holly. What's the big idea? What's like the one thing you want people to remember? The big takeaway?
Well, the big takeaway is I would encourage and invite everybody to participate. And sometimes when we see so much resistance playing out, it can be very, very exhausting. And that's when complacency sets in. That's when you surrender and say, I don't want to be a part of the shit show. It's just not my cup of tea. And I would invite you to take a different tack and to know that when you surrender to what is, you actually give up your power. And we're all in this together, right? And everybody benefits when we participate together. And that is the very basis of a movement, is that everybody feels like they have a voice. They feel like they have a seat at the table. And more importantly, they feel like there's too much at stake just to sit on their hands in the stands. So get up and let's go.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, thanks for coming to the show today. Love what you're doing here.
Thank you.
I love the idea of someone starting a movement.
Yes.
I'd like to see a movement happening here too in regards to how do we use the influence of business to positively impact our community, right?
Yeah.
How do we bring all these businesses together? Many of them doing good things independently,
yes.
But imagine if we started collaborating a little bit, what could actually happen here in our city?
Yeah, and that is quintessential leadership 101.
Well, let's go do that too.
Okay, let's get after it. Let's go, Jeff.
Well, that's our show for the day. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, Business for Good, and Cause San Diego, who are all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership saying, until next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best, for we're all counting on you.